Let's start on these synthesis problems. The first two problems are really supposed to be examples of simple transformations, the type of thing that you're going to learn to do very readily. And in fact, some students have already done this. I think I might have mentioned this in this section as a way of organizing some of your material for studying, is if you put alcohol in the middle of a piece of paper, because you can use alcohols to make a large variety of functional groups. A large variety of functional groups make alcohols. So for example, name off some reactions that you know that produce alcohols as a product. Okay, but I don't want to show that. I want to make people think, but I'll show that afterwards. So doing SN2 and alkyl halides, doing SN1 and alkyl halides. What other reactions? Cationic and anionic ring opening of an epoxide. Yeah, there's an ether that might be formed, but you make an alcohol at the same time. So we have hydroboration oxidation, we have oxymercuration demercuration, and plain old simple hydration of alkenes, or simple nucleophilic, but that we did SN2. Nucleophilic addition to alkenes we haven't tackled yet. H2, that's hydration. That's hydrogenation. That doesn't make an alcohol, that makes an alkane, H2. Well, it's hydration, which is something I mentioned earlier. Okay, making a hydrate, so that potentially can make an alcohol. What about reactions of alcohols? What things have you learned? So making an alkyl chloride, PBr3, make an alkyl bromide, making a tosylate out of it. What other reactions of alcohols have you learned? Oxidation, make an aldehyde, ketone, or carboxylic acid. How about alkylation, doing the Williamson ether synthesis? Dehydration to make an alkene. If it was a halohydrin, then to make an epoxide. So, Dante, let me go ahead and see that. So this is just an example of what someone did to show the different reactions that come together to make an alcohol, and then the different reactions that come from it. But alcohols can be the intermediates. Several of these example problems are to show that alcohols are often a very useful intermediate in synthesis problems. So, you've been using these flashcards, and was this the class I used the painting analogy? That was just yesterday, wasn't it? Yes. So that you've learned all this stuff about the different colors of your palette that you could use to paint, the idea being that you've got these different things you could use to do synthesis. But you need to now start using them and recognizing the common patterns. So that's what these first two problems are for. Do you know of a way, for example, to go directly from an alkyl halide to an aldehyde? Have you learned a reaction to go directly from one to the other? But have you learned a reaction to make an aldehyde? What reaction? Oxidation. So if we had an alcohol, we could make the aldehyde. Do we know a way of making the alcohol from this alkyl halide? Sure we do. It's an SN2 reaction. Now, I have shown these retrosynthetic arrows in class before. And what the retrosynthetic arrow is for logic. For you to solve this problem, to figure out what could have been the step right before or the step right before. But when you do write out your answers for these synthesis problems, it needs to be written as synthesis. And this is exactly the way I want you to do it. To write out the first substrate, show the reagent that would be used to do the transformation, reagent or reagents. You show what you get immediately after that first reactant, then you show your next set of reagent or reagents. In this case, be PCC and I recommend pyridine. Now, yes, the book says that methylene chloride could be used as a solvent. It often is a solvent or a co-solvent in this reaction. And no, you don't have to state explicitly that this is anhydrous conditions, because any chemist doing this would automatically know it needs to be anhydrous conditions. So for this particular oxidation, it is good enough just to say PCC pyridine or PCC methylene chloride. No, because that would over-oxidize. So the question was, since we were already in aqueous conditions at the beginning of this reaction, couldn't we just throw chromic acid in? And the answer to that question is no, because chromic acid is going to do over-oxidation. Now, I want to show you how to do the mechanism with chromic acid, because you did have the quiz question where I used PCC on a secondary alcohol. Even though I said in class how it's kind of a waste to use PCC, it will still work. Here we have to use PCC in anhydrous conditions because we want the aldehyde, not the carboxylic acid. So in fact, after PCC pyridine, this is the product that we would get. So it's just a two-step transformation, and it may look easy. But the reason for showing this is so you get used to this kind of easy conversion. You can go from halide to a carbonyl, or the very next problem is we're going backwards from a carbonyl back to a halide. Before I show you that next problem, let me just briefly show you that mechanism for CrO3. And I mentioned this thing called the Jones reagent the other day. That is chromic acid, water, and sulfuric acid. Sulfuric acid acts as a sort of catalyst, you could say. Because what happens initially is chromium trioxide, which, by the way, one of your fellow students actually saw that movie I referred to, Erin Brockovich, which is quite timely because she was just in the news again today because she's now investigating another environmental case in New York, a cluster of, I forget, some form of disease that has developed that now she's trying to see if it's related to some kind of chemical spill. So just kind of timely. This chromic acid, the way it reacts, is in the source of H+. One of the chromium oxygen double bonds opens up. Or the better way to show it, it's kind of debatable. I'll go ahead and show it this way. We've got formally a positive charge on the chromium now, which gets attacked by whatever alcohol may react with it. Because this is usually going to be used for secondary alcohols, or if you did want to over-oxidize a primary alcohol, I'm going to show you the mechanism with a secondary alcohol. So it attacks in. And from this point forwards, it's virtually identical to the mechanism we learned with PCC. The only difference is now that we're in an acidic environment, instead of an O- with some kind of counter ion there, we just have an OH group coming off of the chromium. So the same progression will occur where deprotonation of that oxygen happens. And then elimination occurs. Since we don't have truly a base, we use what's closest to it, water, to show the proton being removed, kicking off chromium just like with PCC, and producing, in this case, our ketone. If you had a primary alcohol, it would over-oxidize because these are aqueous conditions. So I'll say it one more time. I showed you PCC oxidizing a secondary alcohol. Nothing wrong with that, except in real life, that's the more expensive route to go. In real life, this is what you would do, or in fact, you would avoid chromium agents altogether. And at some point when we get the time, we're gonna go back and cover that Swern oxidation that I'd thrown in on the syllabus as well. That's a non-chromium, a sort of cleaner way to do an oxidation. So before I move on though, any questions on the first synthesis or on this mechanism using CrO3? All right, so let's do the second synthesis problem, which was to go from a carbonyl-containing compound back to just an alkyl halide. So do you currently know any ways to directly do this reaction, to go directly from a carbonyl to an alkyl halide? Yes, I'm sorry. Oh, go ahead. Okay, so reduction. The answer is no, there's not a direct way. But if we reduce, what are we going to make? An alkoxide initially, good. Then you got to neutralize it to get the alcohol, and then what? Then you could use thionyl chloride, or, as we'll learn on Tuesday, we could use, in some circumstances, hydrochloric acid. You might remember that last quarter we did a reaction where we took a tertiary alcohol, just shook it up in hydrochloric acid, and out came a halide. So that is a viable route in certain circumstances. The only caveat with that is that if you have high temperatures with an acid, you could get dehydration. Or if you have any mechanism that goes by a carbocation, you could have carbocation arrangement. So for base, what we've learned so far this quarter, the cleanest sequence of steps would be this. To do reduction, which you could use either lithium aluminum hydride or sodium borohydride. This or the other sections, or all three of them, got confused, or I said something that confused you. There is a difference between the reactivity of lithium aluminum hydride, sodium borohydride, but aldehydes and ketones react with both. And I've already, I think, mentioned this, but we will come back and study the mechanism for this more carefully. I'll just say for the moment that sodium hydride would not work in this case. And that's because the aluminum or the boron of these reducing agents participates partly in the reaction, which makes the reagent different from sodium hydride. Think of sodium hydride just as a source of basic H-, whereas these reagents are really a source of reducing H-. There is a workup step, that's what we usually use to refer to this kind of thing, where immediately after the reaction, you technically don't have an alcohol. You have an alkoxide, because you're in an extraordinarily basic environment. So to isolate the alcohol, you then have to add acid, which I think we covered an example of that yesterday, where I mentioned that to neutralize, you would not want to use tosic acid, for example. Right. So doing the 1-2 combo, we'll get the alcohol. Because the workup step almost always follows the reduction, it's fine to do a 1-2 like. You don't have to show me the alkoxide as an intermediate, in other words, because the alcohol is the main point. Then, although I mentioned HCl as a possibility, I'll go ahead and show thionyl chloride being our reagent that in this case could make the chloride. So questions on that synthesis? Now let's jump over the third one just for a moment, because the fourth one uses elements of both of these two problems and also presents the more complicated structural case. What I mean is, if you look at the reaction, I started with what you could characterize as a 2-carbon fragment with a benzene ring hanging off of it. 8 carbons total. You end up with a product that has a whole lot more carbons. But if you look at it carefully, you notice that really it's two sets of the same type of carbon structure that we started with. In other words, two carbons that's got a benzene ring hanging off of it. Now later on the quarter, not that much later, we're going to start doing more reactions that can form carbon-carbon bonds or break carbon-carbon bonds. So it's going to make examination of the carbon structure a much more important thing in your synthesis problems. But it is important to note that, yes, it looks like it's two units of the same starting material, which we would hope that would be true because I told you you can only use the starting material in your synthesis. On top of that, you'll notice that where the functional group starts on that original compound, we have functionality on the same places on the product. Except, we also have a third functional group, you could say. A third place where there is functionality, and that's this alcohol. So this is the more difficult problem in my mind, because you have to recognize that in order to make this product, we had to go through a functional group that involved two of the carbons. And I know I ran through an example of this either just yesterday or on Tuesday, can't remember which now, where we made propane into something much more complicated. But this is therefore another example of that same thing. Whenever you do see two functional groups right next door to each other, where you might have only started with one, that indicates you probably went through either an alkene, an alkyne, or an epoxide, because those are all three functional groups that bridge two carbons and that gives you a way of somehow possibly functionalizing both carbons. For example, with an alkene, we can make a bromohydrin, a halohydrin, puts an OH on one group and a halogen on the other. For epoxides, if we do cationic or anionic ring opening, we're going to get a functional group in two different places. So this is a synthetic example of trying to use one of those things as an intermediate. You had a question. Yeah, I answered it? Okay. So, based on the type of product here, which one of those three, alkene, alkyne, or epoxide, do you think is going to be our main synthetic intermediate? Epoxide, and you said opening under basic conditions. The epoxide answer is correct because we end up with an ether and an alcohol, and you should hopefully recognize that as the product of an epoxide opening. Why was it that you thought that it opened up under basic conditions? You're all three right. The OH group itself ends up at the more substituted position, which means whatever opened the ring attacked at the less substituted position, which is what happens when kinetics matter, which is what happens when you're doing basic conditions. So, one more time, because you have two functional groups right next door to each other, then that's why I'm just going to tell you, strategy-wise, you should recognize that as being from an alkene, an alkyne, or an epoxide. We narrowed that down to an epoxide because that's the type of thing, this is the type of structure you would get when epoxide opens, an ether and an alcohol. And then finally, we are going to say that this is basic conditions for opening because of where the ether ended up, or you could also say it as where the alcohol ended up. Now, do we know a way of making an epoxide directly from an aldehyde? Not directly. Do we know a way of, what functional group do we know that we can make an epoxide from? Alkene, or technically, what else? A halohydrin, which also would have come from an alkene. Do we know a way to make this aldehyde directly into an alkene? No, but how do we know how to make alkenes? From an alcohol, correct? Can we make an alcohol from this aldehyde? Yes, we can. So let's start with that. So again, lithium aluminum hydride or sodium borohydride, because it's the far safer reagent, when possible, I almost always list sodium borohydride. Technically, I could dehydrate this molecule, but just to show a clean example of elimination, I'm going to turn it into a leaving group first using tosyl chloride. And then using potassium T-butoxide or some other hindered base to perform the elimination. So now this is a common sequence of steps as well, a larger one, maybe not as obvious of one, but very common type of transformation. We're going to later this quarter learn another way of, and it wouldn't work in this case, but we are going to learn a way to go directly from a ketone or aldehyde to an alkene. From here, we need the epoxide. If I wanted to do the one-step version, it would be MCPBA. Now we need an epoxide, because if you're doing anionic renormalizing, you need a base. Well, we already made the alcohol that would be appropriate for the epoxide. And this would be an example of divergent synthesis. You make one compound that you use two different ways. So this alcohol I use to make an alkene, but separately I could deprotonate it to make the alkoxide. Put the two together, the two separate things I've made, and that would be called convergent synthesis. Making two separate things, put them together, make a more complicated molecule. Immediately after that step, I don't yet quite have the product. I've opened up the ring, but I still have a different now alkoxide. And I'm running out of room here, so let me sneak it in this way. At the very end, just add H plus. You'll protonate that alkoxide and you'll get the product. So admittedly, a much more complicated reaction. This is a level of difficulty that maybe won't be on the first exam. But maybe if I wanted to go from the aldehyde to that epoxide the way I did, that might be a viable problem. So questions on this synthesis? Yes? The NaH is there because the way that I state these problems, whatever reagent that has carbon that gets incorporated in the product, you have to show how to make that reagent. Well, I already made the parent of the reagent up here. So this one reagent is being used two different ways, and that's the way that someone would read the synthesis. Sodium hydride is being used to make this, but the same molecule in a different container. Not, this is not all happening in one pot. A different container you would convert to the tosylate. Does that make sense? Now, there are such things called as one-pot syntheses, which is kind of the goal of synthetic chemistry, where you can just pour in a bunch of stuff, and out comes this magic molecule. But at almost whenever you're doing divergent synthesis, it's got to be two different pots. Other questions on this problem? Then we got enough time to briefly go over the last of these synthesis problems. And this is more squarely material from last quarter. Now this is why I need, unless I don't want you all to just keelhaul me, I need to come up with this list of past quarter reactions, because here's the way that I taught it last quarter. I try to do all of the essential review of concepts that we did at the beginning of the quarter. Probably too much review. Most O-Chem instructors don't even do the review. It's like, okay, you all should know this from Chem 1, let's get going. But there's always such a problem making that transition from general chem to O-Chem that's why I spend so much time on the preliminaries. But because of that, we didn't do any synthesis last quarter. Whereas 10 years ago, when I was teaching O-Chem, these kinds of synthesis problems, we would have already been doing last quarter. But because I've changed my approach where I wanted to focus on the fundamentals and on mechanism, that's why we're doing synthesis now. But because we're just doing synthesis now, you do need to know how to do synthesis with the reactions from the previous quarter. And that's what this problem, this last problem, is an example of. Because we start with an alkyne. But we end up with this epoxide. And no, in order to get the product that I've shown you, at least, you can't directly react an alkyne with an epoxide. So what functional group do you know that makes epoxides? Alkenes. So do we know a way of going from an alkyne to an alkene? We know two ways, don't we? If we use Lindler's catalyst and hydrogen, we would get a cis double bond. If we use sodium in ammonia, we would get a trans double bond. Which of the two is going to give us the stereochemistry shown here? See, beyond just recognizing functional groups, you do have to worry about stereochemistry. So let me show you two reactions, and this will answer the question for us. If I had a cis alkene and I used MCPBA, MCPBA does syn, S-Y-N, addition, meaning that it adds just to one face of the double bond. The two things coming up to the oxygen have to be pointed from the same direction. So if you start out with a cis double bond, both the benzene ring and the methyl group are either going to get pushed down and become wedges or dashes, or they're going to be pushed up, and they're both going to become wedges. And both are going to happen because the epoxide can add on either side. So you're going to get enantiomers. Not what we want, is it? That means we would have had to have had the trans double bond to make the product shown. So, sodium in ammonia gets us the trans double bond, which then MCPBA would give us the product. Now this brings up another issue. You'd get the product you want plus the enantiomer, technically. It's unavoidable. There are techniques in real life to separate enantiomers. We didn't discuss that very much when we covered stereochemistry, but it can occur. And sometimes, unless you do have the right set of reagents, it may be unavoidable that you're going to make a mixture of stereoisomers. So in a synthesis problem, if the only way you know how to get there creates an enantiomer at the same time, don't worry about it. In fact, in general, I often show syntheses without stereocenters if we can avoid it, just so you're not worried about that possibility. But this would be the correct solution in this case. Questions about this problem? Yes. H2 would make the cis alkene, which would give us the wrong stereochemistry. So no, you can't use H2 in Lindler's. You have to use sodium and ammonia. But those are two different reactions. One makes the cis, one makes the trans. And you, so H2 makes the cis double bond. That's if you're using Lindler's catalyst. But as you can see down below here, if you make the epoxide, it gives you the wrong stereochemistry. So you can't use that route. has to be sodium and ammonia. Yes? Reduction, I don't know if there's any special name. If you have another textbook that you learned from before, just look up those reagents. If you look in the chapter of alkynes, it's got to be there.
So your reagent is different to make the six extracts?
Yes, it is. So to summarize it, to make the cis hydrogen and something called Lindler's catalyst. Lindler's catalyst is composed of lead sulfate, calcium carbonate, and there's a nitrogen base, quinoline, along with the platinum or the palladium. Now, I don't make people memorize those components of the catalyst. It's good enough just to say Lindler's. So if you use Lindler's catalyst, you get the cis alkene. If you use sodium and ammonia, as I just showed above, and add sodium solid, ammonia liquid, then you make the trans alkene. All right. Have a good weekend, everyone.